Grade 3 Conference, Lecture 62, Continuing Discussion of Language Arts. Why do we teach grammar in Grade 3? I've spoken more than once, of course, about one of the aspects of the 9-year change being the transformation of the model body. That physical body that was lent by the parents at the child's birth, because the etheric body cannot possibly transform the physical substantiality given to it by modern earthly life and create a fitting body for the child. That takes a few years. So the etheric body gets to do its practice work for the first 7 to 10 years of life, and at age 9, the transformation of the model body into the child's own physical body, which then at adolescence will become its organ for personal karma. This is all going on very actively. So the model body was lent to the child so it could be deconstructed, and so that a new body could be built on its foundation. In the same way, the child was also lent its language by its parents. We speak, of course, of the mother tongue. And we know that this is something that is learned completely imitatively by the child. We try to do the same thing in our foreign or world language classes as well, to make it first and foremost an oral experience. We could also say that there's a degree of osmosis going on as well. The child is not only learning words, but is associating meaning with them. And that comes very much from what the parents carry within themselves as the meaning of those words. They're their own life-filled associative processes make those words into something as well. But all of this has been given to the child. Now at age 9, as the model body is coming to an end, this is the appropriate time to ask that the child consciously assimilate the language that it only inherited. So in the way that the child is making its physical etheric organism its own, so we ask now that the child begin to make its language its own. And in this respect, we are very fortunate that the children are learning another language, or ideally two, in the school. As Steiner said, it's not so much to develop mastery, at least not in the primary school years, but it's rather to have the experience of inner mobility. And I would take this a bit further and say, and also to have the experience of consciously assimilating a language, of consciously making a connection with it. So this goes along well. It's going to be, through the next 5 years, 6 years, very supportive of the work that we are trying to do in grammar. So this is what underlies our work with grammar at this age. And there are two introductions to grammar. Grade 3 is the first. Grade 4 is the second. In a certain respect, you're really introducing grammar twice. Grade 4 isn't only building on grade 3, but it's presenting something quite different. Grade 3, we are learning the basic elements of grammar. We are teaching the children primarily four things: nouns, verbs, adjectives, and adverbs. That's really all that we're presenting to the children. So four of the parts of speech. There will be more, of course. In a fourth grade, we are, of course, reviewing those parts of speech. Some teachers will introduce other parts of speech at that time, the preposition in particular. But also, the child at this time is learning tenses. So they are focusing in grade 4 on the verb, on the doing, the action word, and they are working on understanding the nature of time and how time is expressed in language. Now, very interesting, in grade 3, we're going to be teaching the children time telling, an introduction to time. In grade 4, it goes into the very structure of their language. And by grade 6 and grade 7, when we get into things like the subjunctive, we are going to be working on the greatest nuances of time to see how the objective and subjective relationship to time flows into our speech. But we can understand again, if indeed the child from the middle of grade 3 approximately to the middle of grade 4 approximately is experiencing the astral flow from the future, indeed, this is the first time in the child's life that they can experience then time consciously. It's not just the eternal present, it's not just duration, but it's also the flow from future and past, and what does it mean to be in the present. So that's how fourth grade will build on what we do in grade 3. But in grade 3, it is now this introduction to the parts of speech. As you will see in the slideshow, I don't have a whole lot of work to show you. We actually did very little writing in this block, even though it's language arts, and you would imagine there's going to be a lot of images and a lot of words to go with it. But it was much more brought into the realm of the kinesthetic, that the children had a feeling for how would a noun move, if at all. How would a verb be brought into movement? And how do adjectives and adverbs flow in and out of that sentence relationship? Now, unfortunately, when I taught this, people did not walk in film classes. That would have been anathema, unheard of, absolutely. But fortunately, I will be able to show you in our slideshow a fairly lengthy video taken from master teacher Marianne Kennedy's third grade class in the Sebastopol Independent School in Sebastopol, California. And there you will see someone who, through conversation with the children and also through a wonderful kinesthetic activity, is awakening their sense of grammar. And fortunately, unlike most Waldorf films in which you never hear the children saying anything, you hear the children's responses, and you are there in real time as children are answering real questions. So it will be a very good example of how to work with this. And I did what most teachers do, which is to take the begin it all with Adam in the Garden of Eden, where he is commanded by Yahweh to name the animal. So what it means to give something a name. What is my name? You don't want to get into pronouns too much now, but you can certainly refer to that very unique pronoun, I, which only I can call myself. And it can be then when you write sentences that you want have the children identify the nouns in these grammar exercise sentences by underlining them in blue or by writing them in blue. Verbs, of course, will be red, those action words. Adjectives can be green, perhaps, and adverbs purple or whatever you choose. So the children now make this important distinction, so important today for children, where these particular rules of grammar are just being really cast asunder, the difference between adjectives and adverbs, something that modifies a noun, something that modifies a verb. and how to understand the difference between those. And there I would really dwell on that, really make a big point of that. And I would also want to bring in here something that I speak about starting in grade one, that one of your responsibilities as the class teacher is to be the guardian of speech. I would say the guardian of the king's speech or the queen's speech, that here we have every right as teachers in a school to be quite conservative about language. I think universities are getting a lot more liberal about all of this, especially because political correctness comes into it. But we can really basically stay with the rules of grammar that have been current for about the last 100 years or so. So to say, you know, how do you feel? I feel good. No, I feel well. Well is an adverb. It modifies the verb to feel. Things like this are very, very important. And not only when we're doing a grammar lesson, but from first grade on, I hope that you have been taking the time, and sometimes it's quite a bit of time, to correct your children's speech, to make good grammar reflexive, even before they know it's good grammar. And this especially is challenging when it's recess time and 25 children have come up to you with various requests. I'm done with my snack. Can I go out now? Or can me and Johnny go out? We're both done. Or that sort of thing. You have a lot of children coming towards you at once. Yes, yes, no. No, you've got to stop and say, is can correct here? Of course you can go out. You're asking me permission. May Johnny and, no, not me. What's the other word? May Johnny and I go out. And good, you put yourself second. Don't put yourself first. So things like that, not that you give them a lesson, and sometimes you just say it properly and they repeat it properly, but don't let that slide. It more than ever, because even if you ask the parents to correct their children's grammar at home, I can assure you many will not. They've got to deal with the children for much longer periods of time than you do. And they're dealing with 1,000 things at once. Don't think your job is the harder one. The parents have it much harder. Also, parents increasingly are not themselves clear about the rules of grammar. They weren't corrected when they were younger. Their parents weren't corrected. You know, this is going back 50, 60 years now of the real deterioration of the respect for English grammar in schools, in our society in general. So you may be the only one in the child's life who is going to correct them when they speak poorly. And it's not to say that this will mean they'll go out into the world speaking perfect grammar, but at least at this time, when grammar has a formative force on the child, when grammar is accompanying the transformation of the model body into their own body, when grammar, we might say, has a skeletal force in the structure of that child's being, and to say the word I when the word I is called for helps to bring that child upright, helps to strengthen the spine, helps to give them real stature. It's very important that you are assertive here. So this is not just a grammar class. This is an everyday matter, and it means that you have to stay conscious, that you have to be very, very clear when the child is not using grammar properly. And that is far more important in a way than what you specifically may do in a grammar block. One last thing about working with grammar at this age is that don't believe that because the children can recite poems like, I am a noun, I sit still, or, you know, I am a verb, I'm always on the go. That's charming, it's delightful, nice to bring to assemblies or to a parent evening, but that is not grammar. That's learning about grammar. But learning grammar is really, it's a skill. It's something in the end that is going to, you know, permeate the child's speech. And that's the most important thing. And of course, it means in the final analysis, watch your own speech. Watch the way in which you speak to the children. Watch the way in which you write on the board. Now and then, we all make mistakes. But are you consistently using adjectives where adverbs are called for, or not making subject and object agree, and so on and so forth? This is, in fact, a major complaint from parents in Waldorf schools all across the country, but particularly in independent Waldorf schools, where maybe you've got a higher proportion of parents with, you know, college or post-college degrees. They complain about the poor grammar that they read in the teacher's reports. And this has unseated more than one teacher that I know of. Not all schools are fussy about this, but there are those that are fussy. And this is one of the reasons, in fact, that a number of years ago, Waldorf schools began to make it pro forma that a teacher should have a bachelor's degree. For years and years, that wasn't the case. You had self-educated people who were incredible teachers, and because they had grown up in a certain generation, their grammar was perfectly good. Their teachers had inculcated that in these child's natures in primary school, the way we're supposed to be doing it. But that's not the case anymore. Even if you've gone through a college education, even if you're an English major, even if you have a master's degree in English, I have heard master's degree people in English speaking horrendously when in their speech they let the laws of grammar go. So be very careful about that. That is perhaps the alpha and omega of your work in language arts, how you speak to your children.